Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time once again for another episode of Health Talks with Dr. Trinh. The one show, the only show that tells you about, well, a healthier life, healthier brains, healthier living. And today, well, we've got a very healthy debate or discussion in mind with our returning guest, Dr. Grove, here to talk about education and how it reflects us. Dr. Grove, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I appreciate your inviting me back. That's very nice.
Dr. Trinh, why did you bring him back? We just had this guy here 2 weeks ago.
A little more than 2 weeks.
Or whatever it was recently. Wasn't that long ago. We had him back. Yeah.
We had just a stimulating discussion that 1 hour was definitely not enough to address what we wanted to address and talk about what we want to talk about. And if you recall, the last time we were here, we talked about why the Asian American students excel academically over other groups. And was it because they are just naturally smarter, or was it because they worked harder? And I think Dr. Grove had a resounding answer that we're no smarter than anyone else.
But driven to success. It's a cultural imperative within the Asian community here. As you said, Dr. Trinh, if you get an A-, that's an Asian F.
Yeah. And is that a good thing or a bad thing, Dr. Yeah. Grove?
I don't know if he wants to go into good or bad here, but I'll let him tackle that here. He's just observing what he sees, I think. Yeah.
Well, good or bad is in the eyes of the beholder. It depends what your value system is. And in my most recent book, which looks at preschool and primary schooling in East Asia being China, Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and ideally Korea, but very little research has been done in Korea, so it really doesn't get mentioned in my book. The book we're talking about is A Mirror for Americans. It was published last year by Roman and Littlefield. And yes, to pick up on what you were talking about, I was looking at what goes on in China, Japan, Taiwan, and Hong Kong, which has been extensively documented over 50 years. But when immigrants come from those places into the United States, I think many people will recognize that very often, even though some of them come into schools with very little English, that they are amazingly rapidly at the head of the class. So what they're bringing with them is not smarter brain. A lot of effort has been made to show that they have a smarter brain. Every one of those efforts has collapsed. There's absolutely nothing to it. What they bring, it's good to say that willingness to learn, to work hard, but the real story is what is really important to them. What is their highest value as a family? And in East Asian families, again, we're generalizing, this won't be true of every single family in East Asia, but, and in Asia generally, I believe academic excellence, academic mastery, and the hard work to attain that mastery is deeply admired and desired.
Yes.
And there, basically, you have the whole story.
So let's see if I can frame this in some terms for our audience this morning, because I really want to get them more involved in this. We as a society love to attack our educational system. Every politician, every business leader, every mom at the local PTA meeting starts with the assumption that there's something wrong with our educational system. And we've tried through the years of the last big overhaul that I can remember was under George Bush, when they had this drive to standardize, to test. It was like the old missile gap that I grew up with in the 50s and 60s. We're falling behind the Russians. We're falling behind the Asians. So we've got to test, 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 and we've got to standardize curriculum, and we've got to drive better results. We can't just play around in these schools anymore. We got to get serious. We got to drive our kids. We got to vis-a-vis the rest of the world. We've got to score higher. Now, even with all that determination and testing, all that did is just create more, well, you're just teaching to the test. It's not really learning. It's just rote memorization. What about creativity? What about inspiration? Blah, 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 blah. All that kind of stuff. So we're constantly saying there's something wrong. And yet Dr. Grove says, look in the mirror. If you think it's wrong, it's just a reflection of what you want to see, what you want to do. Is education really the priority? Is scoring high on tests, getting A's, really the number one priority for most American parents? I'm not sure it is.
Of course, it is for a few families. And let's leave aside that it certainly is for many immigrant families.
Yeah.
But we're dealing in large generalizations here, and it's been recognized for a long time by anthropologists and sociologists who look at American culture and educators and so forth, that, hey, nobody here is saying, at least that me, nobody's saying education is not important.
Right.
But in relation to other important things, it's in the middle someplace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you some examples of that. So we talked about last time. I mean, I raised a daughter here in South Orange County, which is an affluent, upscale community. A much higher percentage of kids go to college. It's just expected. Everybody's going to go to college. My daughter did not. But the vast majority of kids, Dr. Trin said, hey, it's just assumed you're all going to go to college. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, 12th grade isn't the end of the educational system for many, particularly in the middle or upper middle class or upper classes of society or in immigrant societies. That being said, I can recall, this is just anecdotal, but boy, if your kid, like my daughter, was on the varsity basketball team, that was a big deal. And I bragged about it all the time. If my kid got straight A's, that's nice, but I wasn't running around telling the whole world, hey, my kid got straight A's. Somehow I was more excited as a parent to see them, the well-rounded education, the more than just the bookworm, the idea that they're an athlete or an actor or a rap star or something. I don't know. There's so many other things that we seem to, say we want education, but boy, the parents get real excited and real involved in these other activities and not so excited or involved in school. Why?
Well, this is really the fundamental story that I'm trying to tell. Unfortunately, there is not an easy fix to this, but at least...
Because if it's a problem, it's within us that we're not right. We're saying, what's wrong with the school system? And the school system should hold up a mirror and say, we're reflecting what you think is important.
And I think Dr. Trin will bear me out that in Asia in general, and certainly in East Asia, some people refer to it the philosophy or the ways of life there and the way of thinking about learning and education. It's sometimes called Confucian. There was, of course, a sage named Confucius. He almost was a contemporary of Socrates, who was, of course, in another part of the world at that time. And this importance of education, this terrific importance of academic learning, or what some people would derisively call book learning, is sometimes attributed to Confucius. And he certainly had a role to play, but he was not the originator of this. Confucius took thought and ideas and values that were current in his time, and he came to embody them during his life and became extremely well known in his own time as well as in subsequent times right down until today when we're still talking about him, the importance of learning to mastery whatever is important. In their day, it wasn't math or science. In their day, it was something else. It was the classics. The old, even older writings, older than Confucius, that were thought to make somebody a highly educated person.
Or in Western terms, our forefathers used to study Greek, and they would study Aristotle and Plato. They would memorize the Aeneid from Virgil and things like that.
I have the feeling, and it's maybe just my perception, that every year we in government devote more dollars toward the education system. Are we seeing the results of that, Dr. Grove?
That's a loaded question. Yeah, what results are you looking for? Are you getting...
There's an old saying, a definition of frustration. Frustration is when you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah, madness.
Yes.
I believe that's a good characterization, because when we engage in all these reforms and throwing money at things and making new rules and laws and so forth, we're not really addressing the fundamental problem, which is our highly individualistic culture.
Yes.
And highly individualistic cultures aren't highly conducive to learning to mastery in classrooms. the kind of cultures that exist in many other parts of the world, not only Asia and particularly East Asia, which is the part that I know about,
right,
but in many other cultures, there's much less emphasis on the individual and everything that goes with that, and much more emphasis on the collective or the community. Sometimes these cultures are called group-oriented, sometimes they're called collectivist, sometimes they're called communitarian. I like communitarian. That's the word I like. And these are...
Where the greater good is outweighs your own individual desires.
And one of the interesting things I think that I learned doing these books and is certainly written about in them, and in particular in The Drive to Learn, the one about how the children are raised at home, which is really a book about their culture, is that the researchers have found, I don't know how to put this, I think it will be shocking to some people, that what an individual child wants doesn't count for very much because it's what the family wants. What the family wants is what the family members want.
Oh, true.
It doesn't necessarily mean that an individual member can't speak up and express an opinion. I don't think that's true. But it means that one way or another, what they want is what I want. And as a matter of fact, you may be aware that one of the things that psychologists like to talk about, educational psychologists, is the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation.
That from within or that from without? What springs up within you, so, your own wellspring?
Here in our culture, being an individualistic culture, research has found that when children choose what they want to do, let's say with a classroom project of some kind or a term paper, what do they want to write about? There are many ways that this might apply. When they make a choice and follow through on that choice, they're more likely to be successful and satisfied. The right things have happened.
So that's a support.
If they do what the teacher tells them to do or what the mother or father tells them to do, that doesn't rank as high on the satisfaction and success measure.
All right. So let's see if we can turn this into some tangents here.
It's not the same in Asia. The difference between intrinsic and extrinsic collapses in East Asia. There really isn't a difference between what I want and what the family wants.
It's very interesting because I know in our culture, we emphasize follow your dreams, follow your passion, your individual dreams, your individual passion. I'm not sure that exists in Asia where you follow your dreams and you follow your passion. It's more like what's good for the family. You pointed out something that's very interesting. And so does that mean that if you're individualistic, where you're following your dream and you're following your passion, does that mean that the value of education just falls off somewhere?
No, because your dream and your passion may require a great deal of education. You yourself, I mean, medical school and residency and all of that is a big deal. So it doesn't necessarily rule out education.
Right, right. But you're absolutely right. If I can imagine an Asian family, Vietnam, China, Korea, Taiwan, it's more of a family decision on activities as opposed to an individual decision on life decisions.
So let me give you another example. So we did a show a couple of years ago on, it was kind of a real niche program put on by a group that does coaching, guidance, whatever you call it, helping kids learn and everything. And they focused on immigrant kids mostly Chinese. They were in Orange County, large population of Chinese people who still live in China, but send their kids to the United States, starting in high school, hoping they'll get into an American university because their perception is Stanford, Harvard, UCLA, whatever, UCI even, that these are better institutions than they have over there. Now, a funny thing happened, they admitted. A lot of these kids don't want to go home because once they've been exposed to the American way of individual thinking, what do I want? Who do I want to be? Nobody ever asked me that question before. Here's what I scored good at. Here's what I was told. Here's where my parents pushed me. Here's where the state pushed me. Here's where the school system pushed me. I guess that's what I'm supposed to be. And suddenly these kids are waking up saying, maybe I don't want to be a doctor. Maybe I want to be a ballet or whatever or something, you know.
Yeah.
Something very creative or individualistic. And in a weird way, they send them here to get the benefit of what they perceive to be better education. But in the sense, they get
westernized.
I was going to try and say it in other ways. They get corrupted by our American system here. And it's hard for them to go home and fall back into the communitarian view here.
I believe that one reason they send their kids here is so that they'll become thoroughly able to do everything in English. The funny thing, I've been in this field for many years, and my original field was international education. And among international educators, there was a saying, this goes back a number of decades. They used to say, worldwide, it was understood by a lot of people that the best education in the world was to send your child to elementary and secondary school any place but the United States and send them to college in the United States.
Yes.
And that's the best education, because in elementary and secondary, and my book, A Mirror for Americans, is mostly about elementary and why they do so well in the way they teach their lessons. And we can talk about that. Whereas in the United States, there's, you know, lessons get taught and some things get learned, but the real emphasis on individualism and sports and clubs and, you know,
being a well-rounded person.
I was in that too. I did that a long time ago. But when kids in many cultures abroad go to college, they're really kind of coasting at that point. Getting into college is the big deal.
Right.
Yes.
And you have a terrific education by the time you get into college. And then in college is a little bit of a coast. But colleges are really good in the United States. They really teach something.
Well, let me bring up one other point that I think this is true. You can verify if it is. In many parts of the world, particularly Asia, or even in England and other places like that, getting into college isn't automatic. There is this all-important entrance exam. We take an SAT that just sort of says which college you can go to, but it doesn't say whether you can go to college. I can go to college anywhere. There's a billion colleges, from little ones and local ones and community colleges up to Harvard.
If your money is green, you can get into a college.
You can get into a college. But there, in many of these places, if you don't score well, then your path is suddenly different. You're in a technical school, you're in a trade school, you're in something else. Yeah. Only the best are allowed to go on. Not everybody. And so it puts this huge pressure to pass that exam. Talk about that exam in Asian culture. I think they do it in England and other places too. But
well, in one of my books, I don't remember which one it is, I say, look, you know, for an American child, for an American junior or senior in high school to get into college, what can they put forward to represent themselves, to persuade the admissions people to select them? Well, first of all, it's their grades,
right.
And then it's the SAT or the ACT, which, of course, these things are in the process now of getting de-emphasized and phased out. There are letters of recommendation from teachers. There are letters of recommendations from other important people. There are summer jobs, and of course, some of these, and internships, and of course, some of these kids go and get really extraordinary things to do in foreign countries and to help save the sick and the
Dr. Trin has some of them is tongue out clubs at these high schools and colleges where these kids are trying to go to Haiti or Vietnam and help vaccinate their kids and stuff.
And then in addition, one of your parents might have gone to that university. And so some universities give preference to students of alumni. Oh, I forgot to mention the essay.
The essay. When did
peered
this
college essay?
I never had to write a college essay in the 70s to go to college. It was just an SAT and a grade thing.
And then even more than the legacy admissions, if your parents went there, what if your parents is a big donor?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But if you're an Asian junior or senior and you want to go to college, there's only one thing you can do is ace the big test, which in China is called the Gaokao. That's it.
Talk about the test. How long is it? How tough is it? How many kids pass or fail?
I don't have that information in front of me. It's a fearsome thing, no doubt. But see, this is within the cultural experience of Asia. I think probably both of you know, and I'm confident that Dr. Trin knows, that there was an examination in China which lasted over 1,000 years. I believe it lasted exactly 1,300 years.
Wow.
It only was discontinued in the early 1900s. And that exam determined who became a senior government administrator. And that was the only thing. And I do know a little bit about that because the people have written about it. And people, we got kids now that fear these tests and they want extra time because they have some problem that they have and so forth. In this case, what you did was, first of all, you studied for years with a tutor, and then on the day of the exam, you went to the exam location, and you took with you some food, some water, a chamber pot, maybe a little bedding, and you were put into a room with the exam questions, and 3 days later, you exited and handed in your paper. And they passed, the rate of people who made a terrific score was something like 1% or 2%.
Wow.
Now, that's a serious exam. We don't have anything to even remotely compare to that. But this was a standard thing every year. I can't actually say that it was an annual thing. In China, some people in the West thought that this was a really good idea. You want the best and the brightest to be running the country, so you give a really difficult exam. And that's the main way, or maybe the only way, that you choose.
I'm going to be a typical American, like Dr. Trinh, was successful in college and went to good universities and all this stuff. I find that abhorrent. I don't know how our audience does. What a stress. Well, kids must kill themselves or get sick or whatever or something. If they don't pass, they're ruined their whole life. One test.
Yeah, well,
the individual is more than a test. It's who they are and their individual gifts and their individual contributions. I'm all about finding them, not just grading them and testing them. I don't know. Yeah.
God forbid their low self-esteem if you don't get the top score.
Yeah, your life is ruined. Now, having said that, what we pointed out the last time is, I'll give you the flip side of it. The other value that we put, at least us American dads, is sports. Oh my God, if your kid shows any ability, get him into sports. And by God, we're there every week at the sideline and we're coaching them and we're buying tutors and we're pushing them and we're bragging to our buddies and we're fighting in the stands because our kid did this and did that now.
And I just want to jump in here. And not only that, but we expect the kid to, whatever sport it is, football, hockey, whatever, we expect them to practice, work at it again and again. Take the advice of the coach. Get
and if you don't like it, tough bananas. And yeah. if you get weak, be tough. Exactly. Pick yourself up. Get back out there again. I don't care if you were shamed and humiliated. If you work harder to make the cut, do it better the next time. It's driving them the same way Asian parents drive kids in scholastics. We drive our kids in sports.
That's right. And they really don't care all that much about sports, and they sometimes don't even allow their kids to do sports because it detracts from their studying. So it's almost a mirror image, the kind of effort that many American families put into their kids' sports is comparable in many ways to the kind of effort that East Asian parents put into their kids' learning.
Are we
surprised then that they do better than us in these tests?
That really sheds a light, guys, because I've never did the sports analogy. I mean, my son, you know, Jonathan was in NJB basketball, and both our kids were in track and cross country and things of that sort. But that analogy is amazing because most of us have not thought about that. The effort we put into sports, whether it's dancing or gymnastics, and the money we put into it, and the coaching and the extra hours. I remember my daughter spending hours every day on whether she was doing gymnastics or dancing. It was several days a week. It was full time for us. Not just full time for her. It was full time for us because we were there the whole time driving her off, you know, dropping her off, picking her up. But, you know, 16 hours a week on whether it's gymnastics or dance was the effort we put in for sports. But you guys are right. It's the same effort that the Asian community put in, except it's those resources went from sports to actually math and English, the other stuff, right? You guys are right.
And think about this. It's not just the effort and the money. That's a big deal. It's how you did it. In sports, there was no complaining. You practice. There was a cut or various stages that kept pruning the teams as you went up from NJB National Junior Basketball to high school to other things. And you kept having to prove yourself and make the grade. And kids got cut and they were hurt and they were disappointed and the parents were disappointed. And they fought like hell to try and get through that test, through that examination, through that trial by fire. But when it came to it, there was no whining. There was no complaining. You get in there and you work your butt off. Yeah. But when it comes to school, well, okay, you tried. As long as you gave it your best.
Yeah. At least finish your homework.
Yeah.
You guys are absolutely right. What a light bulb moment for me to realize.
I know we're on Zoom here, but when your listeners finally hear this, is it on Zoom? Are we visible?
Yes, we're visible now. We're on Facebook Live and YouTube.
Oh, so it would be visible.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
And, so, and it's a podcast and you can hear it too. So,
yeah. So here is the cover of my book, The Drive to Learn. And this is important. And I bring it now because it's related to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I think if you look at this, you'll see that we have presumably a mother and a child. They have a workbook in front of them down here. They both have pencils in their hand, and you can tell that they're in a kitchen because you have the stove behind them.
Right.
Yeah. I'd like to tell you the story behind this photograph.
Okay.
Okay.
In directly in line with what you're talking about, there's another important aspect to this, and that is, once a child in the United States gets involved in sports, usually the parent isn't fully able to really help to train and coach the child in that court, in that sport. They give them a lot of support. They cheer them on. They listen to them. They throw money at it to get equipment and everything. But when you come to East Asia and you're thinking about how parents deal with their children's learning of academic topics, they're the parents, because they've been through school and presumably have done very well in school themselves, they're better able to help the child and to support the child. And so what happens is that in East Asia, I liken American parents thinking about their kids studying are a little bit more like cheerleaders. They're monitoring. They're making sure the homework gets done. They're making sure the kid has, you know, a quiet time at the kitchen table to complete it or whatever. But in East Asia, the parent is much more like an athletic coach or an athletic trainer. They do the work with the child. In some cases, it's well known that Asian parents will go out and buy the textbooks, and they'll learn and they'll read along in their own copy of the textbook so that they can discuss and work with the child on whatever the topic is. And another thing they do, which is illustrated here, is that they'll go out and buy commercial workbooks. Now, when the parent and the child sit down to work together on learning, it's a serious thing. They are really talking about the learning. They are figuring out, how do you divide this? Whatever it is, whatever it is. So I wanted a photograph on the cover of this book to show that in action. And I think both of you might be aware that there are a number of large businesses in the United States and actually around the world that have nothing but photographs.
Yeah, stock photo shops.
Yeah, stock photo. And you go into their shops, and I said, okay, so I'm going to go into the stock photo shop and I'm going to find a picture of an American, you know, some parents working very hard and supporting and sitting side by side with their child and doing something academic. Well, you can find pictures with children learning, I mean, with parents and children learning, either with something to read or more often with a computer. But it is always fun.
That's the
They are always laughing and smiling. Okay. It is having a good time. This is not the way this is thought of in Asia.
Let's
this
talk
is serious
about
business. Now, to get to this, you know how I got this picture?
No.
I hired a photographer and two models, and we took this picture. It cost me $2,000 to get this picture. That's because there was no stock photo that showed parents and children working hard and seriously at academic learning.
So let's pursue that. And then I know Dr. Trin wants to jump in here. That's the key. That's where I want to pivot. That's what you brought up last time. That's what you just brought up again. When it comes to education, there are two views. It's either the sports analogy of learning. This isn't about fun. Go out and run the track and do it 100 times and practice 100 more. That's not fun, but it's what's necessary to achieve.
Exactly.
So it's not about how much fun. It's about how much you achieve, how much you can do. When it comes to school learning, for most Americans, it's about fun. It's about entertaining. It's about holding their attention. It's not about forcing them to do everything. It's not about rote memorization anymore. It's not about drills. We used to get drilled with flashcards and all sorts of other stuff. That's not fun. So somewhere along the way, we decided school had to be fun. Sports doesn't have to be fun. Music doesn't have to be fun. Dancing doesn't have to be fun. It's about hard work and practice and repetition and memorization.
Mastery.
And if you fall, get up, dust yourself off, and keep going. But in school, the minute it's not fun, it doesn't hold my attention, I'm not entertained, I'm bored, I've got the ADD, I've got 2-second attention spans. The whole world's got a 2-second attention span when it comes to school. So then why are we surprised that we are turning out entertainers more than we're turning out educators?
Yeah, it's a very big, very fundamental difference in deep values.
Yeah. What do you think, Dr. Trind? Is school supposed to be fun? And is sports or dance or other things supposed to be fun?
So here's the other thing that just came to mind. And this goes back to our culture of individualism versus community, right? Communitarian with that. Like, for example, in many friends and family that we know, if your son or daughter got a B or a C, it's on them. It's their fault and they should do better next time. In many Asian cultures, if your son or daughter got a B or a C, it's on the parents.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I'm starting to see now this cultural mindset where my child's success is a reflection of who I am as a parent. My child's success is a reflection of how I did. And so I am responsible as much as my child is responsible for that grade. That's not an American mindset.
No. Because we're an individualistic culture and the child is an individual.
It is when it comes to sports, though, because I lived and died through my daughter's basketball success. I was lousy at basketball, even though I'm 6'4". So I put her into basketball to vicariously live what I couldn't do. And she achieved what I didn't do. She, for old dad, she took it out there every week and fought. And I mean, I think she liked it. I knew she liked it. And it gave her something. I'm not going to say it was all selfish on my part. She really did take to it. She really was good at it. But a lot of it, I cheered her on. I accepted her failings in academic. I came up with excuses. I said, well, that's not for her. She's not this. But I did not accept anything but perfection when it came to sports, and she achieved it. And is it any wonder she barely graduated from high school? She struggled to do that. And yet she was an excellent athlete.
Wow.
Yep.
It was a reflection of me. I didn't live. If she had been a straight A student, I wouldn't have lived through that. I was a straight A student, but I wasn't an athlete, and I lived vicariously through that experience. So that I prioritize. So let me give you one more bomb thrower here. I'll be one more little bomb thing that I've always observed. And we've had a couple people on other shows touch on this. And this is really culturally explosive stuff. I don't want to offend anybody. Here in America, there isn't just one American culture. We're kind of talking about the typical middle-class suburban values that I grew up in. There are other ethnic groups, and we'll talk about Hispanic. I happen to know something about that because my daughter is adopted, and she came from Mexico, horrible life, abused, fell into foster care here, East LA, a poor area. We found her. In our mind, we somehow rescued her. She rescued us. And then we brought her into this culture. And she, 11, when we found her, she couldn't read or write in any language, Spanish, English, or anything. Because she was moved around in Mexico, she never went to school. Let's start with that. She just worked in the fields. By the time she came to America and was being passed around in foster homes, one after the other, they just moved her on rather than try and flunk her. They didn't know what to do with her. She was a wild child raised by wolves in their mind. She couldn't read or write in any language. Couldn't add 2 and 2, and she's 10. Nobody taught her anything. So here's my point. As I've watched this now, and she married a young Hispanic man, and he comes from, you know, humble background here in Santa Ana and other things. His parents are immigrants that don't speak the language well, and all this stuff that we talk about. When I look at their household, and many of these Hispanic households, not only isn't there a priority to learn, because none of these people have been through school, have any educational background, and they don't have the same aspiration that Asians do. Well, my kids can be a doctor, a lawyer, whatever here. There's also an environment, physical environment. Too many people packed in too small a space. There is no place for these kids to study. There is no quiet kitchen table where you can take them aside. Or when I was in my own room, where I had my own desk and where I was locked away. Go upstairs and do your homework and don't come down till it's done. There is no, they're in front of the TV. And there's an iPad in one hand and a phone in the other, and everybody walking through. And I think you can't learn in that kind of environment, even if you want to. So talk, and we had somebody on a while ago who was talking about, I think it was Cal State, the one in San Diego, the one in North San Diego County, whose name escapes me, one of the Cal State systems. And he was there to help minority kids. And he said, the problem isn't just desire. There's a physical
environment
that prohibits them from learning. Too many people, too small a space, too loud, too chaotic, too many other temptations, noise, TV, and these kids never can focus. What do you think about that? Is that a cultural, another cultural layer problem on it here? You get too many people living in too small a space and they don't have the physical space to learn?
Being a communitarian culture, Chinese and Japanese culture also is capable of having more than just a nuclear family in a small space.
Yeah, there's grandma and grandpa and the uncles and everybody else there. Yeah.
But what I'd like to emphasize is I believe that the main point is that when an extended family and the parents and an extended family are deeply, you know, their sense of their own virtue depends on excellent academic learning in school from books and those sorts of things. And that has a deep, deep history in East Asia that goes back even farther than
Confucius,
that goes back farther than those terrible exams that we were discussing a little while ago. It's just a very, very deeply seated, deeply important aspect of the culture. I don't think that is true of the kind of culture you were describing. I'm not saying that they have no, remember, we're not saying that other people, whether it's Americans or Hispanics, we're not saying, oh, they don't care at all about education. That's nonsense. We're not saying that.
Clearly want the kids to learn,
but you know, there are levels with which you can care about something. And in East Asia, it's at the highest level.
Right.
In American culture and in Hispanic culture and in some other cultures.
African-American kids, they complain all the time, you know, that the how do I teach these kids when at home it's chaos?
Yeah. And it's true. There is chaos. Yeah. But there's no way we can, I don't think anybody would be able to do research on this. You know, I have to think. It's very interesting. But I would like to think, as all the years I've spent as an interculturalist and somebody who's deeply interested in anthropology and all the many, many things I've read about this, I would like to think that if you had that kind of deep-seated, historically imperative feeling about the importance of academic learning, that even in that kind of household, they would figure out a way for that student to be able to study. But they don't, just like us Americans, they don't have that kind of imperative to it. It is not part of their definition of self-virtue.
No.
And so they don't have the deep motivation to try to ensure that the child can learn extremely well. It's a matter of what is deeply important to you. That, I think, is the fundamental thing I'm trying to get across. We have other, I mean, talking about ethnic groups, I spent some time as an adjunct lecturer at the New School for Social Research, or now the New School University here in New York, and I had a couple of graduate classes. This is about 20 years ago. I eventually just quit, and the reason I quit is because the American students really weren't interested in learning. I had students come to me, American students come to me at the end of the course, and I'd given a C. Well, that's pretty rough in university. They'll usually give C's or maybe a B minus or something. And they'd say, oh, Dr. Grove, can't you just raise my grade a little bit? Because if I don't have a grade higher than this, my employer isn't going to pay my tuition. And I said, well, whose fault is this? It's not my fault. But I always say the Americans weren't any good, but there were two groups in my class that studied hard and really made me proud. And I love them, but they were very much in the minority. And those people were immigrants and Jews.
Wow.
And they were all immigrants and Jews.
And both of those, again, I know it's dangerous to make cultural assumptions about groups of people. Americans have gotten in trouble for way too long, and we're trying to get away from a lot of that. But my perception, I think many people's perception, is that among Asian populations and Jewish population, education is an expectation and a priority.
A deep priority.
And when you look at middle class, regular Americans, and other lower class or poor people, many of which Hispanic, African American, other groups, and I say, why are these people mired in poverty? Why can't we get past this? Because they don't have the same expectation of pride. Now, this is bomb throwing stuff. I'm not saying they don't want their kids to succeed and be great, but
need to say that there are examples, very excellent examples. I'm not sure I can rattle off names.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't prepared for this. of children who've come out of that kind of background and have done extremely well and made a real.
And so the question is always, how do we teach kids in the inner city better? How do we break the cycle of poverty? How do we break the cycle of racism? I understand barriers and expectations and all these things. I get it. I know there are lots. It's harder. You're in a chaotic environment. There's maybe only one parent in the household. There's too many people in too small a space. There's gunfire outside. There's drugs and temptation all around. I get a lot of the factors. But what we don't ever want to talk about is, are there different cultural expectations in the poor Asian immigrants and the poor Hispanic immigrants and the 4, 5, 6 cycle of other immigrant groups that are stuck in poverty here? Do some of them have an expectation and to just make it a priority to get educated? Mm-hmm. Any, they either give up or it's on them or wherever.
Dr. Grove, you are in charge of the Department of Education.
Yes, tomorrow.
Tomorrow, what would you change?
I would turn down the job.
No, we've drafted you. You gotta go.
Because
this is a communitarian project. It's for the greater good. It's not about you. It's about the greater good here.
Yeah, I don't believe that the problem is with the Department of Education or anything that the Department of Education can control. The problem is in our culture. So I'm sorry to say that ultimately in broad societal terms, the message I have is for those who are concerned about education is not very hopeful.
Because it's not money. We got to change our cultural
But here's the other side of that. For individual families, I believe there are things that can be done. Leaving aside the question of whether the household is crowded, and I'm very aware of that. But for individual families, I do have suggestions in this book, The Drive to Learn.
Drive to Learn.
About in the, you know, the last chapters say, okay, we understand how the East Asians think about education now and so forth. And what do they actually do? And what can we do? What can we as a mother and a father do to create an atmosphere in the home that clearly values education? And I actually end up with giving 7 specific suggestions.
So let me give you one more as we wrap up. And I know this is another bomb thrower thing here, but I'm a Catholic. I grew up in a Catholic school. Mm-hmm. And when I finally left the Catholic school system, we moved around the country and we finally moved. It was about 5th or 6th grade. I went into public schools for the first time. And I remember walking into the class in the middle of the school year and they were taking a test. I think it was in English. And the teacher said, I just want to see where you're at. This isn't going to, don't worry about how you score. Just do it. I got the top grade in the class. And I won't say it's because I was the smartest kid, because this was like they're teaching sentences and adverbs and adjectives and structure. The nuns pounded the structure into us. And when I came, I was astonished that 5th or 6th grade, they still don't get the basic structure of language.
You know why? Because they think that kids won't like it and they'll get bored and they don't want to go into all that details. We got to make it easy for them. We just got to, kind of slide them into this. They don't need all these details.
We used to diagram sentences crazy and do all this stuff here. The structure was what they pounded into.
I think one reason why I love to write books is because I'm old enough that way back in junior high school, I got a really good grounding in sentence diagramming and all that stuff. And I love to write, and frankly, I'm quite good at it.
So have we, in addition to the parents, I know you say the problem is within us. The look in the mirror, if you want to understand why kids are the way they are.
Right.
Expectations and priorities within the family, and many times within the culture at large.
Yeah.
But there is also then that reflects in how we teach these kids.
Yes.
If we don't teach them repetitively, if we don't teach them theory and structure, then how do they really ever understand?
I don't know. They do it in other cultures and the kids come out better, but we just don't really want to do it because we put the emphasis on the individual. An individual kid said, do I have to learn this? God, this seems so difficult.
Boring, dry, dull. Yeah, exactly.
Dull. We don't want to drill them. I've heard educators say, absolutely, we will not drill kids in any way, shape, or form because it'll drive them away.
And yet
I had to drill my own kids at home. My wife and I drilled them.
We drill them in basketball. We drill them in music.
Yeah. Well, but that's important.
Wow. I'm coming away from this kind of sad for education system. I'm coming away from this conversation saying this is not fixed by money. This is not fixed by legislation or laws.
No, it's not.
Wow.
It's a reflection of who we are.
Where's the hope?
The hope is at the family and extended family level.
Okay.
I'll give you one more hope, though. And I wonder, maybe this would be a, we ever had you back a third time. We could argue, I could argue, that having all this set aside, American kids don't score well on tests. We don't get grounded in the basics. We don't get drilled over and over again. So we don't master these subjects or fully understand them. And right. It's all about fun. And we don't force them to do anything that's not fun, et cetera, all this stuff. And we don't, and we just sort of accept it's on you and do the best you can and whatnot. However, there is there something to be said for that individualism that does let the kid pursue their own major, their own course of action, their own thing? Does that create maybe less test results, less basic knowledge, but maybe more imagination and creativity?
Well, we were talking a half an hour ago about intrinsic and extrinsic, and we are in the West, we are in America, and it is probably quite accurate to say that intrinsically selected courses of action, courses or whatever, tends to be more motivating for children. We brought it up, I brought it up, because in East Asia, the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic collapses because of the communitarian nature of the family. So maybe it would.
Because there's been some criticism why, you know, the Chinese are obviously out to overtake America in many ways, shape, for whatever reason, whatever you call it. They don't want to be treated as second class. They want to be seen as equal or greater. And many say, oh, my God, Asians pulling so far ahead of us economically, scientifically, technically and whatnot. And yet right. Keeps coming back to, but that creative spark that creates a new thought, the Einsteins of the world, the Googles of the world, the music of the world, that something that takes sort of an imaginative creative spark gets kind of driven out of kids through repetition and book learning and drilling them. And you just start following the normal path. So you master that, but you may not be prepared for the future pivots and the future creativity. Does creativity get killed by drilling? And would we rather be creative and imaginative and create the world's future? Or do we want kids that are well-grounded, well-trained, well-prepared in the basics? I don't know.
Well, one of the things I learned when writing The Drive to Learn is that our definition of creativity is different from the definition of creativity in East Asia.
Okay, which is what?
So the way they think about creativity, they have people who are creative. It's quite a different definition. It doesn't, again, I think this is a feature of individualism. We tend to prioritize the brand new idea that comes out of an individual's head.
The spark, one thought nobody else had. Pursue that. Yeah.
This is, you can understand in a communitarian culture, that would not be how they would.
It tends to be more incremental change.
It's more incremental, yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm going to take this and make it a little better rather than a whole new leap of faith into something. That's pure research. That's pure conjecture. That's a waste of time. Let's just make this incrementally better here.
Dr. Trent, is that kind of your understanding of creativity in Asia?
Yes. And here's another bomb I'm going to throw here. Paul's been tossing bombs all morning. I'm going to toss my own bomb. So in major industries, in large corporations, usually, and I don't know if this is culture or this is the argument of creativity versus being book smart. Usually the CEO isn't necessarily the A student. They could be the C student, and they're usually a C student, American, you know, Caucasian CEO, who hires a whole bunch of book engineers smart. And book smart A student Asians.
Yeah.
So are we, by pushing the book smart A student Asians, who are engineers, computer scientists, and they're good employees, are these folks not trained for that creative C student CEO brain who's at the top?
I suspect there's some truth to that. So then,
what do you
as
think
much as Asians say they're accomplishing and moving up, and they certainly are on a cultural level, they're not moving to the final level because that level requires a different skill.
Creativity.
It's not maybe a communitarian skill of getting along and cooperating and building a team and incrementally making things better based on what you know. It's that wild leap, that Elon Musk brain, that Bill Gates who dropped out of Harvard brain.
I would like to point out that the way you two are discussing this is an individualistic take on this problem.
Oh,
you're looking at it, talking about individuals, the individual Asians, the CEO, Bill Gates, so forth and so on. If we were all communitarian, we'd be talking about this in quite a different way.
Society.
We'd be talking about what the community, what people with different kinds of abilities, all working together, all cooperating, all united in some community sense, are able to accomplish. And what individuals are doing would be much less the topic of discussion.
Which again goes back to sports, teamwork. It's not about me. It's about the team. It's about the group succeeding, not just whether I succeed.
But we do pay a lot of attention to the person who's able to throw those touchdown passes. They get a lot of attention.
That's been the conflict in sports. And if you wanted to argue sports as I do with others, that's what's either ruined sports or made sports. When I was a kid, there was no spiking the ball. There was no celebrating. We lost, but look what I did. You know, I scored the fantastic play, but the team lost. I don't care. Look at my stats. More and more, it's been about individual players, individual stats, the highlights on ESPN. And as long as I do that, I get my big money, whether the team wins or loses. I don't care.
One of the things I discuss in the Drive to Learn is how Americans and East Asians react quite differently to failure.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger.
Give us a little brief idea on that, then we got to wrap up here. We're over. How do we see failure? Well, how do they see failure?
Well, let's talk about academic, you know, doing poorly on a test or during, you know, being a B student or, you know, not being at the top. For many Americans, as we've been discussing here this hour, this is too bad and so forth, but it's not, you know, we tend in many cases not to talk a lot about failure. We sort of let it go.
Right.
It's not that we deny it. It's that we just
don't focus on it.
Don't really focus on it. But in Asia, at least in terms of academics, if you do poorly, then there is a lot of attention to that, because what happened that you did poorly on the test or got a poor grade in that, you know, a B in that course means that we can diagnose that and we can figure out what wasn't understood and we can drill you in that and we can make it so that from then on, you're a top student. And that's one of the functions that parents, they work with the kids to figure out what it is they don't understand. This is a diagnostic procedure and the plan for action about how to correct. So failure gives us useful information that we can follow up on.
So may I suggest then in closing another little bomb thrower thought,
uh-oh,
this is just an American culture. This is baby boomer culture. Baby boomer culture is all about me, and it's all about, I don't want to be negative. Don't give me any negative waves, vibes, or whatever. So I'm not going to talk about failure or problem. Nobody dies. They just pass away. There is no failure or problem. It's just a challenge. We don't view it as something. We minimize all these things. We set them aside. Anything that's negative and I don't want to hear about it and talk about it, let's just move on. Let's not focus on it. I'm never going to get old. I'm never going to fail. I'm never going to die. I don't want to think about any of these things. And when they were faced with them, we give it some other term. It's not failure. It wasn't for them.
Yeah, it wasn't for them.
Yeah. They don't have aptitude in that direction.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Got to find out what they're good at.
Yeah, we dismiss that. We minimize it. We give it some other term. We never call it a failure any more than we call it death, or any more than we call it a problem anymore. Companies don't have problems anymore. Just challenges.
Challenges. That's a good company word.
Yes.
All right. Well, good company discussion here. Fascinating stuff here. I just don't know if we really grasp. There was a famous cartoon when I was a kid called Pogo. In there, Pogo, the famous line that he was always quoted as saying, "We have met the enemy and he is us."
Right. I have quoted that myself and in my writings.
There you go.
If you ever want to get back with me, we've spent so much time talking about things that are mainly about this book.
Yes.
Which is about the culture as transmitted by the parents. And we still haven't said a whole lot about my more recent book, A Mirror for Americans, which is about what goes on in schools in East Asia. And there's a good story to tell there, too.
Let's do it. I'll look at the dates. I'll send you some dates. Let's do it.
Okay.
And we are obsessed.
Now, do you both have copies of this book?
I don't have a copy of that one. I have the copy of the other one. I haven't seen A Mirror for Americans.
Okay. What about you, Dr. Trin?
Yes.
You have it.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, let's talk about that book. Let's do it in a few weeks. And yeah, there's so much more to talk about. And I still want to kind of talk about this association between getting great grades. And is it a good thing that your self-esteem is tied to it? It's back to this individualism thing. Or because I live in both worlds. As a child growing up in a culture that's all grades and academics, I live in this world where, yes, we want to strive and get great grades. Do we want to tie our self-esteem to it? Do we want to tie who we are as a person to these grades? I mean, are Asian kids committing more suicide than American kids because they have bad grades? I don't know the statistics. And is that a good thing or not?
As you said once before, Dr. Trin, as a good American here now, a child of immigrants, foot in both worlds, you look at your own kids and you say, I wanted them to succeed. They're going to college. I'm going to do this. But yet, I want them to be well-rounded. I want them to
well-rounded.
Be
But you know what's interesting is we as parents, I'm Vietnamese, my wife, Jenny's Chinese, and we both were, you know, we're Americanized. Obviously, we grew up here, but education is still really at the top. It's God, family, and school. Right? It's all the way. They're all kind of up there. And it's
and where I grew up, it was God, family, and sports.
Sports.
and oh, by the way, maybe education too. Yeah. I should have thought of it.
That helps. But that was where I came from in the heartland of America. It was God, family, and sports. Go down to Texas and see what they do on a Friday night. It's God, family, and sports.
So, Paul, are you in touch with my publicist? She can send you a copy of this.
All right. I'll have to reach out. I'm sure I
Teresa,
can.
Teresa Ascott.
Yes.
You know who she is.
I do. That's how
I'll let her know.
Yeah. I'll send Teresa some dates as well. Let's have you come back and let's talk about your second book here. That'd be awesome.
Okay. Because we'll try hard to keep on this topic and not get off on the other one.
We all want to find, Americans want a quick, easy answer. So give me the money. Give me the answer. What are they doing? We'll imitate it. We'll follow it. Maybe that's the answer for us. But if we don't change who we are, we're going to emphasize other things other than education.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
All right. Take us out, Dr. Trin.
Okay. Thanks so much, Dr. Grove. More to come. Our part three to come here. Our only guest who's gone to part three and part two and so much more. And looking forward to learning more from you. So God, family, and grades? I don't know. We'll find out. We'll find out.
We'll find out. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. If that isn't a healthy discussion, I don't know what is. About the health of our kids and the health of ourselves here, the health of our country. Tune in for more here on Health Talks with Dr. Trin, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net. Streaming live from the University of California, Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.